Here we go.
They call themselves the
Heroes Asylum.
Uno, morons.
Welcome, everybody, to Heroes Asylum, the rebirth. So, we are doing the rebirth of the reborn series this month because we are reborn again.
Yes, we are. It's all about resurrection and having fun. We've had fun the first 2 weeks. We've been doing mostly sticking to our old ways, but I thought this one would be real, real fun on the subject of rebirth. And we teased it last week, and we're doing it this week, is rebirth albums from a band or artist that had a bad first, could be second or third album. Like, just they took a lull.
Honestly, some of mine are well into their careers where they really took a little nosedive. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I got one band on here that actually did it twice.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
you know what? I mean, maybe I think I might know who you're talking about.
I think you know what I'm talking about.
So, but Jeff and I are huge music fans. We've always been. We've always wanted to do a music podcast, but we just, you know, just with when we did Heroes and then when we were doing Midnight Movies, it was just hard to find the time to squeeze them in. So that's why we're trying to like meld this into Heroes as well. So we should be doing this more and more throughout, you know, the shows starting from now on. So next month we'll probably, whatever the theme is, we'll try to find a musical latch, you know, something that connects it with musically.
Yes, because we've always wanted to do it, and I want to get it actually on a recording instead of a bar stool, so this will be fun.
What's wrong with those bar stool conversations?
There's a lot of bar stool conversations.
All right, Mel, I'm going to let you go ahead and knock it out, because since this was your brainchild, it was birthed inside that cranium of yours.
Yeah, that little psycho cranium of mine always comes up with interesting ideas. Okay, so I'm going to start with this one. It's a well-known band, probably my favorite band I've seen. I've seen like six times, and that's Depeche Mode.
Oh,
they released an album. Yeah. This is, you probably don't even know this one, and people will probably, big Depeche Mode fans would agree. In 2001, they released Exciter. It was produced by a Bjork producer. The person who produced a lot of Bjork albums was producing this album, and it was basically they did Ultra before that. Ultra is a great album. Has Barrel of a Gun. Yeah. It's No Good on there. Really good album, and they came back with this one, which is going to be like their, because they didn't tour with Ultra. The lead singer was having drug issues, so they couldn't tour. So, but they were going to tour with this album. And I got to say, when I bought it, I was like, what the hell am I listening to? It is so not them. Nothing. There's like one catchy song on there. I think it's called something. I Feel Loved. I Feel Loved is the only song on this album that is kind of danceable. But everything else is just like, I don't know what the word is, but I would say like low key chill music. Everything has like this soppy, like very sultry, like, yeah, what's going on? Like a Good Night Lovers is one song. It's like, you know, Soul Sisters. It's a very like low monotone. Not a great album, great tour. So obviously they had to come back.
I almost thought you would have gone more black, was it?
Black Celebration?
Yeah, Black Celebration. Because to me, I think that they were kind of like stuck at that point, and then it was Music for the Masses that like brought them back and redeveloped them into this new sound. That's what I was like, honestly, I was looking at Depeche Mode, but I was like,
that's an interesting take, because a lot of people would say Black Celebration is where their kind of like core sound was created, and then they branched out to like more popular albums like Music for the Masses, then Violator. I like Black Celebration for what it is. But I can see why.
Well, you see the turn. See that turn going into like Music to the Masses and then Violator and Ultra. I mean, like, and I'm the same way, man. Those early 90s, late 80s albums for me are Depeche Mode. Yes, yeah. I'm a fan of like the early stuff, the early, you know, new wave pop stuff that they were doing when they first came out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for me, like, again, probably just the my age, because that's when I was really delving into and like broadening myself into musical different musics. I mean, I grew up country. My dad was a country fan. My mom was a Beatles fan. Mm-hmm. So I had that kind of mix, and I think that's when I was like discovering myself. The joys of CDs at pawn shops.
Oh, God. Like, how many times did I go to the CD warehouse around here? You probably remember the one.
I'm not even talking a store. I'm talking I used to go get $2 CDs at the pawn shop because I thought the album cover was cool and I thought I heard about this band, and that's where I got them.
Oh.
Yeah, no, I'm not even, like, talking about that. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Oh, no, CD warehouse was around. They had what people wanted you to hear, you know, the record label. You go into... I mean, that's where I discovered Concrete Blonde. Was at a pawn shop. I found Bloodletting. I was like, "What is that? That's a cool cover." Took it home. I'm still to this day a massive Concrete Blonde fan. I can pick up everything they do. Jeanette is one of my favorite singers of all time. So
great, unique voice too. Yeah, I forgot about Bloodletting. They should have had that on the soundtrack for Lestat.
Yeah,
I can't believe they didn't have that song.
Yeah, that's a little too on the nose, though. But they've got better ones, vampire theme ones. Everybody knows that. They've got "Walking in London," which is such a much better vampire song. I don't know. So,
I didn't tell you the album they came back with.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. So let me get to that. Then you can go. So after that, that album wasn't really well received, and then they went to "Playing the Angel," which it was kind of like a back to form for them. That's the way I would say. They had this one song, "Precious." They still play live nowadays. That's probably the biggest hit that came off that album. But it came basically goes back to that dark synth tone kind of sounding dreary, brooding, and it's just a really good album. So it's basically come back to form, and I liked it for what it was.
That is the comeback album.
Very cool.
Well, I kind of told you, I grew up in country. So
yeah, I was waiting.
For me, the Man in Black.
Oh,
you got, he had a complete resurgence. Cause it,
I like, see this. Wait, I got to see. I think this is one of the ones I figured that we had on our list.
You literally had Boom Chicka Boom was like 91 or 89. So, I mean, it was like, and it was like really bad. Yeah, bad one. And then you had the
with the chicken song on there, right?
Yeah, you have the chicken in yellow.
The chicken in yellow.
And then you had him going back a little bit to the well with Highwaymen 2 came out. Mm-hmm. And then he just sort of stopped, you know. But Rick Rubin was a massive fan of his and just pursued him relentlessly, literally stalking Johnny Cash from show after show. When Johnny was doing shows on the West Coast, Ruben was there. Hey, I want to get you in the studio. I want to do this. I want to do that. And he's like, no, I'm happy kind of doing my thing, going out, playing the classics, doing this and that. He's like, no, just come over. Like, just all I want is you, your guitar, your voice. Nothing more. And he's Johnny gave him a chance. It was actually Johnny's son who actually kind of helped him and convinced him, because he was a huge fan of popular music at the time. He was our age, so he knew of Metallica and Slayer, and he's like, no, this is the guy that's like done this, you know, with these guys. And it's amazing to take a look. Who is it? I can't remember the guy's first name, but Bieto is his last name. And he has an interview just recently, actually, with Rick Rubin. And he's like, what's your musical, you know, history? And he's like, I'm not a musician. I just know what sounds good. Like, literally, that's probably one of the best producers of our time. Yeah. You know, bringing out Run DMC and you know, starting the early hip hop phase, and then into, you know, Slayer and God, who else did he? I mean, just who didn't he do? Rick, Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, Chili Peppers, I think I have. I think Rick Rubin is doing one of my. He's producing one of the albums on my list. So, see, this is what I was kind of telling you. Like, our list is going to interweave at some point.
So, but yeah, no, for me, it was the American Records. It became a series that revitalized it. But the initial one was American Recording. Sorry, American Recording, not Records. But American Recording. And I mean, it had everything in there. Just Johnny being Johnny, just low key old songs, even doing a cover of Danzig, of a song that Danzig wrote for Johnny. He was actually went into Danzig, you know, or Rick went to Danzig and said, "Hey, could you write Johnny a song?"
He did a couple covers on that album too, didn't he? He did a Rusty Cage is on there.
No, Rusty Cage is on the second one. That's why most people, okay. most people in their heads think of that album that you're talking about. That's American Recordings too. No.
Oh, okay. Now, this one had Personal Jesus then.
No, Personal Jesus was on the second one. Yeah, like I'm saying, you look at the it's old standards and a couple of like new things, but yeah, he didn't add a band until number two, which is why you're thinking. That's why you know Rusty Cage has got a drummer in it, and you know a little electric. Yeah. No, the first American Recordings, straight acoustic, straight Johnny, nothing else, just a microphone and Johnny sitting in a room playing whatever he wanted.
I think didn't this album produce one of those famous shots? And actually, it's a T-shirt that he has, where basically I guess Nashville had like written him off, and they were like writing like bad critic after bad, like every show. He sucks. He's over the hill. And he responded basically with just flipping the big bird.
No, that response was in the fact that he was not nominated after this album selling as much, getting a Grammy, but the CMAs and the Nashville was not recognizing him, you know, as what he did. Mm. And so what he did is he took out a full page ad in the local paper of Nashville with that image. Yeah, and I used to have that T-shirt. I absolutely love that one.
I love that shirt. I gotta rebuy that.
Actually, yeah, I actually got to see Johnny Cash on that tour. I'm past the trial time, but I went to watch him at the Hollywood Bowl because I lived out in Hollywood at the time. So I'm at the Hollywood Bowl, but he was sold out. So I lived on the other side of the hill. Me and a bunch of my neighbors, we all walked across the mountain, the hill. And just sat on the field and watched it. I mean, he was probably this big. You know, the bowl was this big. I mean, it was so tiny, but you could hear him. And that was just like an amazing show. Just I was sitting out there.
Cool. Yeah. That's really cool, dude. You never told me that. It's really rad.
So that is my number one. Yep. Hence the shirt tonight.
Man in Black, Mr. Johnny Cash. Well, I'll take the ball from here. One of my favorite bands actually is on the list. I'm not going to do them twice. Maybe I'll do them twice. But they've actually had like really great albums. Probably some of the best of all time. I know Mike's not a big fan, but I still follow them. I still have a little soul for U2. So basically they had The Joshua Tree, which was like that album blew up. Huge album, had all these great songs on there. They still do to this day. Then they did another album called Rattle and Hum, which basically was a live album. It had like a cover of a Beatles song, Helter Skelter, on there. Basically, a lot of their hits were on there. And they played that. They toured. But, like, things were catching up with them, basically. Basically, critics were saying, oh, U2's lost their sound. You know, they're the same old preachy stuff. You know, it's blah, blah, blah. And it was followed by Bono, actually, in one of the live shows at the ending of the tour. He basically said, hey, guys, we got to go away for a while and dream it up all over again. And dream it up, they did. They came back with Octung Baby, which is literally just like a complete switch. Gone were all those like preachy songs, and you had like they're mixing the keyboards, electronics. You had like literally six songs or seven. Hell, the whole album is really good. I don't think there's a bad song on there. One became a huge hit. The Fly, Who's Gonna Ride Your Wild Horses. Like so many good songs. I had a friend I used to talk to, a common friend that me and Mike have. And her favorite album was this album. That's the one album we kind of vibed over because there was a couple of songs on here that like you wouldn't think are really good, but when you hear like, man, these songs are really good. And that was the complete switch. And I was like, holy shit. Like a lot of U2 fans came from this album, but almost like their rebirth. Like you had the fans of the 80s basically was the Joshua Tree, then them being a rebel Ireland, and then like the 90s came in. Like Mike said before, all these great albums coming in the 90s in a sound. U2 definitely was that with this album.
Yeah, okay.
What you got there, bud?
Yeah. They came back, unfortunately. They should just let that go.
You know, gotta make that.
I bet you've got this. Actually, let me...
You might have it.
I'm pretty sure I do. I've got a few here. We're gonna go with Queen, Night at the Opera.
Ooh, I don't have that one.
Really? Yeah, Queen. No. If anybody's watched, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody, you would see that literally this album's what saved Queen, because they were about ready to, the record label was about ready to cut them off. So you had this album just come back and save them, and with this album you're talking some of the classic. Biggest. I mean, you're talking probably about one of the biggest arena rock songs of all time, with
two of them.
Yeah,
to be honest, there's two of them on there. Like, was it "We Will Rock You"'s on there, "Bohemian Rhapsody"? I know they have more.
Well, I mean, with Night at the Opera, I mean, yeah, the big one was Bohemian Rhapsody. And honestly, let me see, the track list wise, the other songs not on it. Yep, "You're My Best Friend," maybe. And of course, the jokingly one, "I'm in Love with My Car." But yeah, no, that one, because we probably would not have Queen ever again, because they were, like I said, the record label's like, no, we don't want to do this. And they're like, you haven't done much. Anything. Yeah, you've done great on tours, but you haven't had anything else. And that saved Queen, and to the point where we got some of the classic soundtrack songs from Flash to Highlander, all, you know, coming after that. And they still continue.
Yeah, I don't think they made a bad album after that. You know, now that I think of it, I think the last album that he did before his death, Innuendo, is a really good album. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's alluding to his death, like without alluding to his death. Really good album. Really good album. There's a great song on there called "The Show Must Go On." I think they played it sometimes at the end of the Highlander TV series when it was ending, or like a dramatic. They always played Queen, probably more in the TV series than they did in the movies. But great album. Great album. Holy crap. I forgot about Night of the Opera.
So what do you get now?
I got one. One of my favorite bands of the 90s, to me, speaks of the 90s. We had that grunge era, and everybody loved Nirvana, and I liked Nirvana, too. I was more of an Alice in Chains fan, and I'm going with Alice in Chains. 1995 was their last album. It was a self-titled. They didn't do anything after that. It was a decent album, nothing great. They had a couple hits on there. But nothing like, I think, is Brother on there? No, that was the EP.
Sap had a Brother.
Sap, okay. But, you know, self-titled wasn't great. It had, like, the dog with the three legs as a self-cover. And like I said, nothing great. And then Alice in Chains went away. Lane, unfortunately, passed away. They did an unplugged album after that, too. Again, it was just a rehash of what they'd done. And they came back with a new singer. Black Gives Way to Blue. I tell you, when I heard this album, I was like, first off, they're going to miss Lane. No, they didn't miss Lane. The guy who they got to replace Lane is another guitar. I forgot his name. Mike probably could pull it up. But he complimented Jerry Cantrell on vocals so well that you really couldn't tell. Like, you miss Lane. Of course, he has that distinct voice. But in this album, it's like this guy was like going with Jerry, tit for tat. And you could see a little bit of Lane in his voice. Not too much, but a little bit that's different. I like this album. It kind of blew me away when I think a couple times I played it. I think I sang a couple of their songs, maybe, if I remember right. But great album. You never listened to a great rock album, too. A great comeback album by Alice in Chains.
See, I don't know about that. I wouldn't rate that one because they didn't recover their – it didn't bring them back. They were just there. I couldn't name one song off that album. I mean, it's just –
is one song.
But like I was saying, I mean, as a – in the music lexicon, that was just like, oh, they survived and have kind of moved on, but they've never gotten back to what they were.
That's different. I'm saying, as far as like a newer incarnation of Alice in Chains, it could keep them going, not at the level they had. I'm not going to kid myself, but I'm just saying they could go on. It was a rebirth from that old time where they were at such a zenith that they came back as a new incarnation of Alice in Chains. And I kind of dug it. And I think a lot of people in that year actually dug it, too. It was like Album of the Year.
What's it? Really? Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I think it was. Like, look it up. It was like Album of the Year in the rock community. But that is my pick. Okay. Black Gives Way to Blue. Check it out.
Okay, well, I think we'll go with bands that have recovered after singers' passings and stick with Black. AC/DC, Back in Black.
Ooh, I had that on my list, but I was like, I think Mike is gonna.
Yeah, I mean, he just said that's just one of the best ones to kind of like show that not only did they save their careers, but they escalated their careers further than what they did with Bon Scott. Bon Scott was an amazing singer. Those albums are just dirty. I mean, just dirty and nasty.
That's a good word for it.
Absolutely dirty. Love them. Back in Black, they still kept that sound a little bit, but they were cleaner, you know, in a way.
Yeah, it was a lot more. It wasn't as dirty. I agree with that.
So I mean,
kind of like got that nice sound and the guitars on there. The guitars are so fucking good on there. Shook Me All Night Long. Come on, that song. I ain't gonna lie. Anytime that song comes on, come on, you're having a little bit of rocky good time. I always do. So many songs on that album.
Noise Pollution is probably one of my favorite. I on the back end of my tape, I wore out that because of Noise Pollution.
Great album though. They had another comeback too in the 90s. Well, Razor's Edge wasn't there? Comeback?
Because they never really like dived off. Like they just continued. They probably with Thunderstruck there was more of a resurgence because of the video. But I don't think they ever lost momentum after Back in Black.
I don't know. I always thought it was a comeback album. And then they did the Last Action Hero soundtrack somewhere in the middle. I remember too. Like they had a couple.
That was
songs
after Razor's Edge. Yeah.
Yeah. So they kept that. Okay, my go. Stick to the 90s. Sort of grunge. Mike's alley. I think more punky. Green Day. Dookie came out. Dookie's a legendary album. I love it. You love it. Couple albums later, they did Insomniac, which I did not like. Thought it was kind of hot garbage. But after that, they probably released what people widely call probably their best album. Cultural album, too, is American Idiot. And what can I say? The songs speak for themselves. I think almost every song on that album is a banger. American Idiot, the self-titled album, a song is a great. There's just so many good songs in that album. They toured forever with that album too, and I think it got so big that it was on TV shows and CW. I think a couple movies used it, so that album's heavily influenced. And that's like they're kind of like a reincarnation of Green Day there too, because Dookie, they hit that certain level. They kind of leveled off a couple albums. I mean, depending what kind of fan you are, maybe you like those albums, but to me, they kind of like resurgent and rebirth with American Idiot.
Yeah, I don't know on that one. I kind of
see.
Yeah, that to me, they never lost steam. Yeah, to me, Insomnia, Nimrod, they were all great albums. I never saw them having a bad album.
I think they took a dip, those albums. I mean, just personal opinion. I just think they did.
Okay, I mean that's your opinion. Yeah. For me, like I said, Green Day has always just maintained a good steam. Like I said, when we were doing this list, I was talking about like things that like the bands of like that were about ready to die, not like they were going to be vanished. And I can tell you one right now. And I'm surprised you haven't mentioned it yet. Kiss Alive.
Ooh, I do have Kiss in the list though.
Oh, okay. But a different album.
I do have Kiss in the list, but it's not for that album.
Okay. But I mean, really, when you look at their catalog, they were done. They were done. People weren't getting them. They just, as much as the Kiss Army is out there, and guys, I love Kiss. I love you guys to death out there for the Kiss Army, but you got to realize, I mean, they were just not doing too good. And then they put together Kiss Alive, and when I say put together, it is not a complete live album. They have come out and they have admitted, yes, the audience is extra. It's from the audience is from that tour, but it's not from that show. So they did flub it a little bit, but it doesn't matter. It revitalized their career.
Agreed. But people say they actually made their career. Like after that, like that was basically the beginning. I mean, they've made some bad albums. Trust me.
Oh yeah, they've had a couple of singers throughout
They've made some horrible albums.
That fucking Circus album was horrible.
Ooh,
horrible.
I like Psycho Circus. I'm one of the fans of Psycho Circus.
You're a Kiss fan, and so you should. But yeah,
I am even a fan of The Elder, which is probably one of the worst Kiss albums ever made. Awful album. Gene Simmons is crying and singing about a love song. Oh my God, it's so bad. What is it, World Without Heroes? Yeah, World Without Heroes. It is so bad, but yet I still love this band. But yeah, to back to Jones, they Alive was basically that album that created Kiss. I would agree with that. And after that, everything came, like comic books, movies, Kiss Meets the Phantom TV movie. Oh, yeah. Watch it. We're going to watch it soon. That's one of the movies we're going to do. I know we are. But that, the touring, of course. Shit, they're still touring.
No. They stopped. They retired.
Is he really done this time?
Oh, yeah. Well, they're doing the digital Kiss thing. And then I guess Gene tried to do a solo tour, and he was scheduled to be here. Apparently he's canceled his whole tour because of ticket sales. Listen, we want to see them together. We don't want to see them individual. And
nobody wants to see them apart, man.
I gotta be honest, and some people may hate me out there in the Kiss Army. Ace sort of won the war when it comes to being able to hold his own by himself.
Yeah, he did. Ace had some good hits, man. I mean, back in the New York Groove with Standing, he did have some nice little hits, but back in the New York Groove is catchy.
Yeah.
It is catchy, but good choice. I think I'm going to jump on that Kiss bandwagon and tell you about a true, awful Kiss album. And it's not The Elder. It's Creatures of the Night. Shitty album. Garbage.
Was this when they unmasked? Was this Vinnie Vincent?
This is with the mask on.
Oh, okay. So I think they were with Vinnie.
So look, in a way, you kind of teased it. This is their last album with mask on.
Okay.
Next album, obviously, is with mask off.
Yeah. So it was the last one with Vinny, or not the last one with Vinny, but Vinny was on it, and then I remember that one. Oof, yeah.
Yeah.
They were trying to find themselves and trying to fit into the '80s hair metal band phase that was going on, and they were the godfathers in a way of that music because all those guys were influenced by Kiss. And I was like, it was like they were trying to find their place as the elder statesmen of rock, you know, and metal. And they just said, yeah, they were, that one was not it. You know, the next album, when they came around and said, hey, you know what, we're wiping off our makeup. And that's where they got reborn.
Yeah, that was the end of the old Kiss and the birth of the new Kiss. And I was Lick It Up, and they had some fun songs on there. It's a really good album. Like, say what you will, did they look goofy as hell with looking with like 80s rockers? Yes, they look fucking goofy.
That's what was that. That's what was there. I mean,
that's when Gene Simmons to me was kind of exposed. Like, he was like more like he this guy needs the makeup on. He did not need the makeup off, man. Like, he looked weird. Watch those Kiss videos of that era. He just looks so out of place.
Yeah, and the same time he cut his hair and he did The Runaway, the movie Runaway with Tom Selleck, because he was trying to go Hollywood as well.
God, The Runaway. Weren't we talking about that movie a couple weeks ago?
Because I was watching it.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I get sacked. But yeah, Creatures of the Night, basically Lick It Up, and Lick It Up was a great album. Check it out. It's really, really good. Rocks. What you got there, Jones?
I have, and this one kind of hit a little close to home for me. And I'm not a huge fan of this band. I've seen them live, and I think they are just trash live. But their music for the 90s, like late 80s, early 90s, and then they took a little break. Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, I do got them. Let's see what you got.
Yeah, well, Californication. Californication was the reintroduction of John Frusciante. Before that, they had One Hot Minute with Dave Navarro. And again, I think that album's great. I absolutely love that album. Love that album. I was a Jane's Addiction fan. I was actually a fan of Dave's stuff before Jane's Addiction. So I was like, oh, that's cool, man. I like seeing him and do other things. But yeah, it just wasn't Chili Peppers. It was an LA homogenous band put together in the 90s. And then, of course, I mean, just on a personal level, you look at like what Frusciante went through during that time, his addiction. And this kind of hits close for, like I was saying, this one kind of hits close for home for me. I lived out in L.A. at the time. I worked at a guitar center with my band I had at that time. We had a little band going. And the guitar player worked up around the guitar section and the pedals. And Frusciante literally walked in with the guitar from the Under the Bridge album.
Oh, wow.
And he was trying to pawn it. And like sell it. And then my buddy's like, nope, we will not take that. The store themselves were like, no, we will not take it. We can maybe rent it from you, because there they had like a Walk of Fame, a Rock of Fame is what they called it. That's where I worked. It's like a gift shop, but it also had all the musicians' handprints out front, and it had like the original Bo Diddley guitar and like Peter Criss, like original snare. Like it had a lot of rock memorabilia, and they were kind of offered like, hey, we're not going to buy it from you. But we're going to
work.
Yeah, we're gonna go ahead and rent it from you. So, but yeah, it was like one of those things. And then when I saw, because then Frusciante had a couple of solo albums,
which are pretty good.
Oh yeah, they're fucking awesome. Yeah,
they're really good. They're really good, by the way. I think I have the first one. It's pretty good. I think I listened to the second one. Not all, but the first one's really good.
Yeah, but yeah, that was I think it was and then them coming back with Californication. I'm not a big Chili Peppers fan, but I know what that meant more on a personal level for Frusciante and the rest of everybody, that he was surviving and actually still had the magic.
That album kind of felt like Chili Peppers too. Like when he came back, nothing against Dave. I think Dave is great. I love Jane's Addiction, Ritual Habitual. Oh my God. Even Dave Navarro, he did like a solo album called Rexall. Really good album too. And Perry Farrell, obviously he has the, what was that side band he had?
Oh, Porno for Pyros.
Porno for Pyros, yeah, really good too. Also, but
John, they pissed me off one day. I was writing a song. I was writing a song for that band I was telling you about, and I was like, I had the song. Like the band went away. The singer and the guitar player left to go like back home for a little bit. They were from Niagara Falls area, Buffalo, and so they went home for a visit with their family, and I stayed there in L.A. And I wrote a song, like I got a recorder, got it to a nice little echo reverb going on in the bathroom. Awesome. I was like, man, this is great. And then fucking Porno for Pyros released the first single that they had. And it was literally the song I wrote, like the guitar.
Was it Pets? Did you write Pets?
Yes.
Like Pets, you look like Pets.
No. It was Tahitian Moon. Sorry. No, it was Tahitian Moon.
Oh, okay.
I literally had written a song just like Tahitian Moon. It's like a week later, like I was listening to it and the radio was on and I'm like, wait a second, motherfucker. Chuck that tape. I was so mad. I'm like, of course, I'm telling my buddies, hey man, I got this song, man. You're gonna love it when they get back. And when they got back, they're like, where is it? I go, it's on the radio already. Go listen to it. Fucking.
Oh man. That's brutal. Oh, it's flattery though. That Perry wasn't the same wavelength as you were. I think it's pretty impressive. I guess I go. Yeah. So Duran Duran released Liberty. Only thing I could say about Liberty, it's garbage. That's it. But then after that, they released a wedding album, which is back Duran Duran. Come Undone is on there. I think they got the guitar player from Information Society. He had come in. So basically, Duran Duran was a three piece. Before they reunited and brought back all the original members, except for one of the Taylors didn't come back, but everybody else came back. But this album, obviously, really good sound. Back to Duran Duran, what we like. You got some of that guitars. You got Simon's voice. And it's just a return to form for Duran Duran, and they kind of like same thing with them. After this album, they kind of just like leveled out. They made like Electric Barbarella, which is a really good album too. The Saint soundtrack they did with Val Kilmer. Really good as well. They threw in a couple songs.
Well, don't forget about Thank You.
I like Thank You. That's not bad. A recent one they did recently isn't horribly bad, but I think this one was like the back to the form of Duran Duran again. Like we've been saying, a rebirth of them.
Yeah.
To like a new generation. And again, when did they come out? In the 90s. Almost like a pattern we've done with a couple like these 80s bands. That had one certain sound, and in the 90s they kind of like rebirthed to like another sound, and that kind of just carried them all the way through.
Very true. Yeah, no, definitely Duran Duran. I can see that because I kind of fell off with them there for a while. So yeah, I didn't recognize Liberty as a bad album. I recognize this one just as a change of sound. I mean, you got Ordinary World on there. It just
Ordinary World. I mean, come
it's
undone.
Just one of the one of the great like 90s, and it just that acoustic guitar solo right at the beginning, just beautiful.
Yeah, it's just a change of pace for Duran as they headed into the 90s. Great, but great album. Great freaking album. All right, my friend, what you got as we wind down?
All right, well, I've got three left here. And I kind of got a feel. I kind of got a feeling one of these you're going to bring up. So I'm gonna go a little 70s band, continued into the 80s, fell apart around 88.
I think I know where you're putting.
Aerosmith. They just like the 80s were just horrible. Rock in a Hard Place, Done with Mirrors, just bad. And then you had Permanent Vacation come back. And that sort of gave them a little oomph, you know, Love in an Elevator.
Kick.
Yep.
Love in an Elevator.
Then a double whammy right after that, where they started getting this great vibe going on, they released Gems.
Oof.
And Gems is just like, why? I mean, at this point in your career, why would you drop a best of album?
Strange.
And then they jumped right into Pump. I mean, just a classic album. So within like 2 years, you had Permanent Vacation, Greatest Hits, and then you jump into Pump. You know, and that's, I mean, you get just great songs off of that. And that just revitalizes them to just let them ride into the 90s and become you know, they continued with their projection that you had. The soundtrack was Armageddon.
Yeah.
You know, that I mean, you jumped into what was the other album that had Crying. Ooh. I mean,
Crying When I Met You.
Yeah, I mean, that album alone was talking. You talk about like every other song's a radio hit. But yeah, no.
Was Angel during this time? That
Angel
was
came out during Permanent Vacation, if I remember correctly.
Another good song.
Angel. Yeah, let me see here.
Classic. Classic ballad.
Yeah, Angel was Permanent Vacation.
Yeah.
That sort of revitalized them because they sort of had fallen apart because there for a long time, Joe Perry had gone off and done his own thing. They brought in another guy to kind of help out. And most of the band of the core Aerosmith had sort of broken away. And then, you know, that Permanent Vacation, that time frame just around there, they all started coming back in together and like reforming the original group. You got to look, you know, when you talk to 70s Kiss, Aerosmith, Cheap Trick, you're talking like those big arena rock bands, and then to see them kind of fizzle away just was kind of sad. And then they had a rebirth, got clean and sober too.
Yeah, clean and sober. No more drinky poos on tour. Yes, that was a great album. I love that album. I love them. Wouldn't you say their comeback began with the Run DMC song? Where was that during this era?
That was 85. So, I mean, that brought them like back into the lexicon and brought their old song back into.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in a way, that wasn't their album. That was Run DMC's album.
No, I know. I'm just saying, but that kind of like you just said, they put it back in the zeitgeist, back in the public eye. Like, oh, okay, these guys are still around.
Yeah. Well, but again, it's not like they were doing a new song. It was an old song. So, I mean, it definitely helped. But I think once you release a full album, like Permanent Vacation, and you have great hits, it just elevates them.
I would agree. Okay, I'll go. I got my last one here. And it's the band that is the second band that's going to be on here twice. And that's U2 again. So I know you're not going to say nothing. So I'll let you be quiet for 5 minutes. U2 did Pop, which is a very dancey kind of concert. They had some really good songs on there. Staring at the Sun is on there. Pop is on there. Really just kind of like glitzy songs, fun songs. But they weren't great. The tour was garbage and blah, blah, blah. So they took a break. It was like 6 years, came back 2001. And they released All That You Can't Leave Behind. Beautiful Days on there. So many great songs. And it came out at the right time, too. That's during 9/11. So the album was kind of like in pop culture zeitgeist. It was out there everywhere. They played the halftime of the Super Bowl, I remember.
Crappy album that got forced on my Apple, on my iTunes, is it? Was that the one?
Recent?
Huh?
It might be.
No, like years ago. like all of a sudden this album shows up on my iTunes and like YouTube.
I don't
think
it's this one.
Okay, that pissed me off. I don't
think
it's this
one. I think that's probably one of the newer ones. The newer ones are they need to quit.
I want to say it was like 8-9 years ago. Yeah, that's another. I was like, well, screw you even more. Do not taint my playlist.
As you can tell, Mr. Jones is a huge YouTube fan.
Yeah, huge.
But they came back with You Can't Leave Behind. Great album. I think won a couple Grammys as well. So that was their comeback. And that was their rebirth back in the zeitgeist. And they kind of just leveled out after that. Some people like them and some people hate them, like the person on the other line here.
Well, I mean, I'll give them this much. They do some groundbreaking things. Like they did do the very first show at the Sphere.
We had
a couple of friends that actually went and saw that and just said it was just amazing to see.
I've seen the videos on YouTube and it looks incredible. Oh, yeah. Like I want to go like, what the hell is this?
I want to see Tool do a show at the Sphere.
Ooh,
I mean,
yes.
With their music and
with their visuals.
Yeah, to me, I was like, that needs to be a thing. That I might actually go for.
That'd be a good one. Or Nine Inch Nails if they went there.
Nails, yeah, but Nails doesn't really have that visual that Tool does. I'm thinking because of the environment, that would...
I don't
Tool
know.
Would,
Nine Inch Nails, they got some. They could do something with colors, I guess.
So, you gotta realize, probably the last Nine Inch Nails show I saw was them and Bowie, and they had nothing visual except five lights beaming down to the stage.
Okay, so you know when they just started.
Oh, no. This was when they were touring with Bowie. This is after Spiral and shit like that. No, this was Nails and Bowie co-headlining. Nails would start the show off. Bowie would come on and start and sing a couple of songs with them. And then slowly you would see Nine Inch Nails band members vanish out of those lights that were beaming to the stage. And there was Bowie's band. There was no teardown between bands. They literally went, okay, I'm out of the light, Bowie's band's in the light, and they just continued.
Saves that production, man.
Oh, dude, it was beautiful. I mean, it was like the most simplistic show I'd ever seen. That's why, like I said, for me, that's like the last time I saw him, it was like just amazing, but it was so low-key. It's like when I've told you about when I saw Mazzy Star, you know, it was a black stage, one white light beaming down on Hope, and she's wearing like this white dress that just fades into the light. And it's just like, I was like, oh my God, I'm just like my jaws on the ground. I'm like the music's, you know, elevating me, the visual, just everything was so great.
That's when you know it's a great show, when the visuals and the sound, they go hand in hand. That's why I like visuals. You know, you see shows of bands that come alive, like they turn like studio albums into great albums. So it's always the live experience.
So I had one I could have sworn you were going to do,
and I never did.
What's that?
Metallica.
Death Magnet.
After the Garbage Can. After the Garbage Can album. And I know what a fan, I know you like.
Oh, boy.
And I was like, man, he's gonna bring up that because that's just a sore subject for
I
any
it was
Metallica fan.
Oh, man, that's some curse words right there.
It's a fight. The
Raw, was it? Saint Anger?
Yep,
oh.
Saint Anger, yep. Which Saint was so Anger. Funny. It was like the album. When I got the album, I got two copies. I got two CDs. One was the album studio cut, and the second was them rehearsing the studio cut. Like, literally, it was the same song list, same everything. It was just a live recording of them in the studio or in the rehearsal room practicing. That album was fucking gorgeous. And then I heard what they released. Like, no, this is what we're going to release, a studio cut. I'm like, that's trash. What, you have
garbage.
An option here and you're going with
garbage.
Yeah, I was so mad.
That's
I'm like, I threw the regular CD away, and I just kept the live album or the live cuts.
I took that CD and ran it over my car 5 times and I threw it away.
Yeah.
I hate that album. There's nothing redeemable about that. Garbage. Yeah. Dude, they could have released like an EP with like 3 songs. It would have been better.
Yeah. Or again, like I said, release the second CD. It was perfect. They just, whatever they were thinking about that snare drum. I don't know if Bob Rock was on that because Bob's a damn good producer. I don't know. I don't know if he was off on that one or they pulled him off.
Oh, maybe they produced it themselves
or
something.
But again, but Death Magnet, maybe not the Black Album, but much better. Back into like what their fans really expected.
Yes. heavy guitar. Thank you. Yeah. One more double snare.
I mean, honestly, I didn't think I'd seen more as much hate for like the Load and Unload albums until I saw the for Saint Anger. I was like, are you guys naming that for a reason? You want us to be angry, don't you?
Yeah, I guess that's how I was afterwards. Actually, I have some love for Load and Reload.
Oh yeah, no, me too. Load. Yeah, if it didn't say Metallica.
Exactly. If it wasn't a Metallica record, people would love this album, but it's Metallica. Like, oh,
there's a ton of bands that like we didn't talk about that the same thing. They release these poor albums, and I'm putting quotes up, that probably if it was under a different name would have like skyrocketed to the top of the charts, but because they said a band name, it was, you know, there was already a stigma to them. This is just gonna, you know, be this way. For the good and bad. I mean, a bad album, you know.
Well, it's back then. You gotta remember, like, most of those bands, they were kind of allowed to make a bad record. You know, they kind of grew into their sound. Like, that's kind of like the old school days of music. You know, you could release a couple albums to get your sound, and then they had the patience. Like, okay, you're going to get there eventually. I mean, they would cut you, believe me. But, you know, back then, I think they were a little bit more forgiving, less now. So you're allowed to make a sound, but...
Well, you got to realize, I mean, nowadays the music industry is not the music industry, not what it used to be. It's all based off of streaming, releasing singles, TikTok, and TikTok, I mean, I mean, that's how people make their careers now, and I think it's great, you know, to see that, and it gives the more control to the artists, but I think at the same time, the music fan kind of misses out on seeing these albums or getting the promotions and finding out about it. You just have to like trip across a band or something nowadays. Yeah, like, it's more a hunt, you know, hunt and peck at this point. I mean, I've sent you a couple bands that just came across because of TikTok. I'm like, oh,
I didn't. Yeah. That's where I find them too.
It's like, oh, okay. You don't find them anywhere. Yeah, like that. What that Kim Dracula came up on my list, and I was like, if anybody wants something phonetically like crazy, that's it.
That's Kim Dracula is. He's a little.
And light. Then what's the new one I just discovered? A Fuzzy Shazam or something like that. I mean,
I think you sent Fuzzy Shazam.
They were just fun. They're like a 70s throwback, and I absolutely loved them. So, all right, guys. Well, that is our list. I'm sure you guys have suggestions. And we do still have our Facebook page out there, so look it up. Here's Asylum. We're still monitoring it and everything like that. So if you guys had any ideas or albums or that we should have done, let us know.
I'm sure they will. I'm sure they'll let us know. I guess before we go, next week we're doing Rebirth of Heroes, comic book heroes. Oh. Basically, that's going to be the one we're doing next week. So check that out.